They covered a great distance in the next few hours, but found no sign of the messenger or another farm. Jeff looked up at the orange sky. "It'll be full dark in less than 2 hours," he said. "May have to turn back. If we hurry, we can make it back to Harl's in time."
"The farm could be right around that next bend," Arlen argued. "We'll find it."
"We don't know that," Jeff said, spitting over the side of the cart. "The map ain't clear. We turn back while we still can, and no arguing." Arlen's eyes widened in disbelief.
"We'll lose half a day that way, not to mention the night. Man might die in that time," he cried.
Jeff looked back at his wife, sweating in her bundled blankets, breathing in short fits. Sadly, he looked around at the lengthening shadows and suppressed a shiver. "If we're caught out after dark," he replied quietly, "we'll all die." Arlen was shaking his head before his father finished, refusing to accept it.
"We could," he floundered. "We could draw wards in the dirt," he said at last. "All around the cart."
"And if a breeze comes along and mars them?" his father asked. "What then?"
"The farm could be just over the next hill," Arlen insisted.
"Or it could be 20 more miles down the road," his father shot back. "Or burned down a year ago. Who knows what's happened since that map was drawn?"
"Are you saying Mem ain't worth the risk?" Arlen accused.
"Don't you tell me what she's worth," his father screamed, nearly bowling the boy over. "I've loved her all my life. I know better than you. But I'm not going to risk all three of us. She can last the night. She has to." With that, he pulled hard on the reins, stopping the cart and turning it about. He cracked the leather hard into Missy's flanks and sent her leaping back down the road. The animal, frightened by the coming dark, responded with a frantic pace. Arlen turned back toward Sylvie, swallowing bitter anger. He watched his mother bounce around as the wheels ran over stones and dips, not reacting at all to the bumpy ride. Whatever his father thought, Arlen knew her chances had been just cut in half. The sun was nearly set when they reached the lonely farmhouse. Jeff and Missy seemed to share a panicked terror as they screamed their haste as one. Arlen had leapt into the back of the cart to try and keep his mother from being thrown about by the widely jolting ride. He held her tight, taking many of the bruises and bashes for her. But not all. He could feel Colleen's careful stitches giving, the wounds oozing open again. If the demon fever didn't claim her, there was a good chance the ride would. Jeff ran the cart right up to the porch, shouting,
"Harl, we seek succor!"
The door opened almost immediately, even before they could get out of the cart. The man in worn overalls came out, a long pitchfork in hand. Harl was thin and tough, like dried meat. He was followed by Elaine, the sturdy young woman holding a stout metal-headed shovel. The last time Arlen saw her, she had been crying and terrified. But there was no terror in her eyes now. She ignored the crawling shadows as she approached the cart. Harl nodded as Jeff lifted Sylvie out of the cart. "Get her inside," he ordered, and Jeff hurried to comply, letting a deep breath out as he crossed the wards. "Open the big barn door," he told Elaine. "That cart won't fit in the little one." Elaine gathered her skirts and ran. He turned to Arlen. "Drive the cart to the barn, boy. Quick!" Arlen did as he was told. "No time to unhitch her," the farmer said. "She'll have to do." It was the second night in a row. Arlen wondered if Missy would ever get unhitched. Harl and Elaine quickly shut the barn door and checked the wards.
"What are you waiting for?" the man roared at Arlen. "Run for the house. They'll be here in a moment."
He'd barely spoken the words when the demons began to rise. He and Arlen sprinted to the house as spindly, clawed arms and horned heads seemed to grow right out of the ground. They dodged left and right around the rising death, adrenaline and fear giving them agility and speed. The first corlings to solidify, a group of lissom flame demons gave chase, gaining on them. As Arlen and Elaine ran on, Harl turned and hurled his pitchfork into their midst. The weapon struck the lead demon full in the chest, knocking it into its fellows. but even the skin of a tiny flame demon was too knobbed and tough for a pitchfork to pierce. The creature picked up the tool in its claws and spat a gout of flame upon it, setting the wooden haft alight, then tossed it aside. But though the Quarling hadn't been hurt, the throw delayed them. The demons rushed forward, but as Harl leapt onto the porch, they came to an abrupt halt, slamming into a line of wards that stopped them as surely as if they had run into a brick wall. As the magic flared brightly and hurled them back into the yard, Harl rushed into the house. He slammed and bolted the door, throwing his back against the portal.
"Creator be praised," he said weakly, panting and pale.
The air inside Harl's farmhouse was thick and hot, stinking of must and waste. The buggy reeds on the floor absorbed some of the water that made it past the thatch, but they were far from fresh. Two dogs and several cats shared the home, forcing everyone to step carefully. A stone pot hung in the fireplace, adding to the mix the sour scent of a stew perpetually cooking, adding to it as it diminished. A patchwork curtain in one corner gave a touch of privacy for the chamber pot. Arlen did his best to redo Sylvie's bandages, and then Elaine and her sister Benny put her in their room, while Harl's youngest, Renna, set another two cracked wooden bowls at the table for Arlen and his father. There were only three rooms, one shared by the girls, another for Harl, and the common room where they cooked and ate and worked. A ragged curtain divided the room, partitioning off the area for cooking and eating. The warded door in the common room led to the small barn. "Renna, take Arlen and check the wards while the men talk, and Benny and I get supper ready," Elaine said. Renna nodded, taking Arlen's hand and pulling him along. She was almost 10, close to Arlen's age of 11, and pretty beneath the smudges of dirt on her face. She wore a plain shift, worn and carefully mended, and her brown hair was tied back with a ragged strip of cloth, though many locks had freed themselves to fall about her round face. "This one's scuffed," the girl commented, pointing to a ward on one of the sills. "One of the cats must have stepped on it." Taking a stick of charcoal from the kit, she carefully traced the line where it had been broken. "That's no good," Arlen said. "The lines ain't smooth anymore. That weakens the ward. You should draw it over." "I'm not allowed to draw a fresh one," Renna whispered. "I'm supposed to tell Father or Elaine if there's one I can't fix." "I can do it," Arlen said, taking the stick. He carefully wiped clean the old ward and drew a new one, his arm moving with quick confidence. Stepping back as he finished, he looked around the window and then swiftly replaced several others as well. While he worked, Harl caught sight of them and started to rise nervously, but a motion and a few confident words from Jeff brought him back to his seat. Arlen took a moment to admire his work. "Even a rock demon won't get through that," he said proudly. He turned and found Renna staring at him.
"What?"
he asked.
"You're taller than I remember," the girl said, looking down and smiling shyly.
"Well, it's been a couple of years," Arlen replied, not knowing what else to say. When they finished their sweep, Harl called his daughter over. He and Renna spoke softly to one another, and Arlen caught her looking at him once or twice, but he couldn't hear what was said. Dinner was a tough stew of parsnip and corn with a meat Arlen couldn't identify, but it was filling enough. While they ate, they told their tale.
"Missed you to come to us first," Harl said when they finished. "We've been to old May Freeman plenty times. Closer than going all the way to town square to see Trig. If it took you 2 hours of cracking the whip to get back to us, you'd have reached Mac Pasture's farm soon, you pressed on. Old May, she's only an hour or so past that. She never did cotton to living in town. You'd really whipped that mare, you might have made it tonight."
Arlen slammed down his spoon. All eyes at the table turned to him, but he didn't even notice, so focused was he on his father. Jeff couldn't weather that glare for long. He hung his head.
"There was no way to know," he said miserably.
Elaine touched his shoulder.
"Don't blame yourself for being cautious," she said.
She looked at Arlen, reprimand in her eyes. "You'll understand when you're older," she told him. Arlen rose sharply and stomped away from the table. He went through the curtain and curled up by a window, watching the demons through a broken slat in the shutters. Again and again they tried and failed to pierce the wards, but Arlen didn't feel protected by the magic. He felt imprisoned by it.
"Take Arlen into the barn and play," Arlen ordered his younger daughters after the rest had finished eating. "Elaine'll take the bowls. Let your elders talk."
Penny and Renna rose as one, bouncing out of the curtain. Arlen was in no mood to play, but the girls didn't let him speak, yanking him to his feet and out the door into the barn. Benny lit a cracked lantern, casting the barn in a dull glow. Harl had 2 old cows, 4 goats, a pig with 8 sucklings, and 6 chickens. All were gaunt and bony, underfed. Even the pig's ribs showed. The stock seemed barely enough to feed Harl and the girls. The barn itself was no better. Half the shutters were broken, and the hay on the floor was rotted. The goats had eaten through the wall of their stall and were pulling the cow's hay. Mud, slop, and feces had churned into a single muck in the pig stall. Renna dragged Arlen to each stall in turn.
"Dad doesn't like us naming the animals," she confessed, "so we do it in secret. This one's Hoofy."
She pointed to a cow.
"Her milk tastes sour, but Da says it's fine. Next to her is Grouchy. She kicks, but only if you milk her too hard, or not soon enough. The goats are..."
"Arlen doesn't care about the animals," Benny scolded her sister. She grabbed his arm and pulled him away. Benny was taller than her sister and older, but Arlen thought Renna was prettier. They climbed into the hayloft, plopping down on the clean hay.
"Let's play sucker," Benny said.
She pulled a tiny leather pouch from her pocket, rolling 4 wooden dice onto the floor of the loft. The dice were painted with symbols: flame, rock, water, wind, wood, and ward. There were many ways to play, but most rules agreed you needed to throw 3 wards before rolling 4 of any other kind. They played at the dice for a while. Renna and Benny had their own rules, many of which Arlen suspected were made up to let them win. 2 wards 3 times in a row counts as 3 wards," Benny announced after throwing just that.
"We win."
Arlen disagreed, but he didn't see much point in arguing.
"Since we won, you have to do what we say," Benny declared.
"Do not," Arlen said.
"Do too," Benny insisted.
Again, Arlen felt as if arguing would get him nowhere. "What would I have to do?" he asked suspiciously.
"Make him play kissy,"
Renna clapped. Benny swatted her sister on the head.
"I know, dumbs."
"What's kissy?" Arlen asked, afraid he already knew the answer.
"Oh, you'll see,"
Benny said, and both girls laughed.
"It's a grown-up game. Da plays it with Elaine sometimes. You practice being married."
"What? Like saying your promises?" Arlen asked, wary.
"No, dumbs, like this," Benny said.
She put her arms around Arlen's shoulders and pressed her mouth to his. Arlen had never kissed a girl before. She opened her mouth to him, and so he did the same. Their teeth clicked, and both of them recoiled.
"Ow!"
Arlen said.
"You do it too hard, Benny," Renna complained. "It's my turn."
Indeed, Renna's kiss was much softer. Arlen found it rather pleasant, like being near the fire when it was cold.
"There," Renna said, when their lips parted. "That's how you do it." "We have to share the bed tonight," Benny said. "We can practice later."
"I'm sorry you had to give up your bed on account of my mam," Arlen said.
"It's okay," Renna said.
"We used to have to share a bed every night until Mam died. But now Elaine sleeps with Da."
"Why?"
Arlen asked.
"We're not supposed to talk about it," Benny hissed at Renna.
Renna ignored her, but she kept her voice low. "Elaine says that now that Mam's gone, Da told her it's her duty to keep him happy the way a wife is supposed to."
Like cooking and sewing and stuff? Arlen asked.
No, it's a game like Kissy, Benny said. But you need a boy to play it.
She tugged on his overalls.
If you show us your thingy, we'll teach you.
I'm not showing you my thingy, Arlen said, backing away.
Why not? Renna asked.
Benny showed Lukic Boggin, and now he wants to play all the time.
Don Lukic's father said we're promised, Benny bragged, so that makes it okay. Since you're going to be promised to Renna, you should show her yours.
Renna bit her finger and looked away, but she watched Arlen out of the corner of her eye.
That's not true, Arlen said. I'm not promised to anyone. What do you think the elders are talking about inside, Dums? Benny asked.
Are not, Arlen said.
Go see, Benny challenged.
Arlen looked at both girls, then climbed down the ladder, slipping into the house as quietly as he could. He could hear voices from behind the curtain and crept closer.
I wanted Lukic right away, Arlen was saying, but Fernan wants him making mash for another season. Without an extra back around the farm, it's hard keeping our bellies full, especially since them chickens quit laying and one of the milk cows soured. We'll take Renna on our way back from May, Jeff said.
Gonna tell him they's promised? Harl asked.
Arlen's breath caught.
No reason not to, Jeff said.
Harl grunted.
Reckon you should wait till tomorrow, he said, while you're alone on the road. Sometime boys cause a scene when they's first told. It can hurt a girl's feelings.
You're probably right, Jeff said. Arlen wanted to scream.
No, I am, Harl said. Trust a man with daughters. He'll get upset over any old thing. Ain't that right, Lainey?
There was a smack, and Elaine yelped.
But still, Harl went on, you can do him no hurt that a few hours of crying won't solve.
There was a long silence, and Arlen started to edge back toward the barn door.
I'm off to bed, Arlen grunted.
Arlen froze.
Seeing how Sylvie's in your bed tonight, Lainey, he went on, you can sleep with me after you scrape the bowls and round up the girls.
Arlen ducked behind a workbench and stayed there as Harl went to the privy to relieve himself and then went into his room, closing the door. Arlen was about to creep back to the barn when Elaine spoke. I want to go too, she blurted, just after the door closed.
What? Jeff asked.
Arlen could see their feet under the curtain from where he crouched. Elaine came around the table to sit next to his father.
Take me with you, Elaine repeated. Please. Benny will be fine once Lukic comes. I need to get away.
Why? Jeff asked. Surely you have enough food for three.
It's not that, Elaine said. It doesn't matter why. I can tell Da I'll be out in the fields when you come for Renna. I'll run down the road and meet you there. By the time Da realizes where I've gone, there'll be a night between us. He'll never follow.
Well, I wouldn't be too sure of that, Jeff said.
Your farm is as far from here as there is, Elaine pleaded.
Arlen saw her put her hand on Jeff's knee.
I can work, she promised. I'll earn my keep.
I can't just steal you away from Harl, Jeff said. I've no quarrel with him, and I'm not about to start one.
Elaine spat.
The old wretch would have you think I'm sharing his bed because of Sylvie, she said quietly.
Truer is he raises his hand to me if I don't join him every night after Renna and Benny are off to bed.
Jeff was silent for a long time.
I see, he said at last. He made a fist and started to rise.
Don't, please, Elaine said. You don't know what he's like. He'll kill you.
I should just stand by? Jeff asked.
Arlen didn't understand what the fuss was. So what if Elaine slept in Harl's room? Arlen saw Elaine move closer to his father.
You'll need someone to take care of Sylvie, she whispered. And if she should pass?
She leaned in further, and her hand went to Jeff's lap the way Benny had tried to do to Arlen.
I could be your wife. I would fill your farm with children, she promised.
Jeff groaned.
Arlen felt nauseous and hot in the face. He gulped, tasting bile in his mouth. He wanted to scream their plan to Harl. The man had faced a calling for his daughter, something Jeff would never do. He imagined Harl would punch his father. The image wasn't displeasing. Jeff hesitated, then pushed Elaine away.
No, he said. We'll get Sylvie to the herb gatherer tomorrow, and she'll be fine.
Then take me anyway, Elaine begged, falling to her knees.
I'll think about it, his father replied.
Just then, Benny and Renna burst in from the barn. Arlen rose quickly, pretending he had just entered with them, as Elaine hurriedly stood. He felt the moment to confront them slip past. After putting the girls to bed and producing a pair of grimy blankets for Arlen and Jeff in the main room, Elaine drew a deep breath and went into her father's room. Not long after, Arlen heard Harl grunting quietly, and the occasional muffled yelp from Elaine. Pretending not to hear it, he glanced over at Jeff, seeing him biting his fist. Arlen was up before the sun the next morning, while the rest of the house slept. Moments before sunrise, he opened the door, staring at the remaining callings impatiently as they hissed and clawed the air at him from the far side of the wards. As the last demon in the yard went misty, he left the house and went to the big barn, watering Missy and Harl's other horses. The mare was in a foul temper and nipped at him. Just one more day, Arlen told her, as he put her feed bag on. His father was still snoring as he went back into the house and knocked on the doorframe of the room shared by Renna and Benny. Benny pulled the curtain aside, and immediately Arlen noted the worried looks on his sisters' faces.
She won't wake up, Renna, who was kneeling by Arlen's mother, choked. I knew you wanted to leave as soon as the sun rose, but when I shook her...
She gestured toward the bed, her eyes wet.
She's so pale.
Arlen rushed to his mother's side, taking her hand. Her fingers were cold and clammy, but her forehead burned at the touch. Her breathing came in short gasps, and the rotting stink of demon sickness was thick about her. Her bandages were soaked with brownish-yellow ooze.
Da!
Arlen cried. A moment later, Jeff appeared with Elaine and Harl close behind.
We don't have any time to waste, Jeff said.
Take one of my horses to go with yours, Harl said. Switch them when they tire. Push hard and you should reach May by afternoon.
We're in your debt, Jeff said, but Harl waved the thought away.
Hurry now, he said. Elaine will pack you something to eat on the road.
Renna caught Arlen's arm as he turned to go.
"We's promised now," she whispered. "I'll wait on the porch every dusk till you're back."
She kissed him on the cheek. Her lips were soft, and the feel of them lingered long after she pulled away. The cart bumped and jerked as they raced along the rough dirt road, pausing only once to rotate the horses. Arlen looked at the food Elaine had packed as if it were poison. Jeff ate it hungrily. As Arlen picked at the grainy bread and hard, pungent cheese, he started to think that maybe it was all a misunderstanding. Maybe he hadn't overheard what he thought he had. Maybe Jeff hadn't hesitated in pushing Elaine away. It was a tempting illusion, but Jeff shattered it a moment later.
"What do you think of Harl's younger daughter?" he asked. "You spent some time with her."
Arlen felt as if his father had just punched him in the stomach.
"Renna?"
Arlen asked, playing innocent.
"She's okay, I guess."
"Why?"
"I spoke to Harl," his father said. "She's going to come live with us when we go back to the farm."
"Why?"
Arlen asked. "To look after your mam, help around the farm, and other reasons."
"What other reasons?" Arlen pressed.
"Harl and I want to see if you two will get along," Jeff said.
"What if we don't?" Arlen asked. "What if I don't want some girl following me around all day asking me to play kissy with her?"
One day, Jeff said, you might not mind playing kissy so much.
So let her come, then, Arlen said, shrugging his shoulders and pretending not to know what his father was getting at.
Why is Harl so eager to be rid of her?
You've seen the state of their farm. They can barely feed themselves, Jeff said. Harl loves his daughters very much, and he wants the best for them. And what's best is marrying them while they're still young, so he can have sons to help him out and grandchildren before he dies. Elaine is already older than most girls who marry. Lukic Boggan is going to come out to help on Harl's farm starting in the fall. They're hoping he and Benny will get along.
I suppose Lukic didn't have any choice either, Arlen grumbled.
He's happy to go, and lucky at that, Arlen's father snapped, losing his patience.
You're going to have to learn some hard lessons about life, Arlen. There were a lot more boys than girls in the brook, and we can't just fritter our lives away.
Every year we lose more to dotage and sickness and corlings. If we don't keep children coming, Tibbetts Brook will fade away just like 100 other villages. We can't let that happen.
Arlen, seeing his normally placid father seething, wisely said nothing. An hour later, Sylvie started screaming. They turned to find her trying to stand up right there in the cart, clutching at her chest, her breath coming in loud, horrid gasps. Arlen leapt into the back of the cart, and she gripped him with surprisingly strong hands, coughing thick phlegm onto his shirt. Her bulging, bloodshot eyes stared wildly into his, but there was no recognition in them. Arlen screamed as she thrashed about, holding her as steadily as he could. Jeff stopped the cart, and together they forced her to lie back down. She thrashed about, screaming in hoarse gasps. And then, like Charlie, she gave a final rack and lay still. Jeff looked at his wife and then threw his head back and screamed. Arlen nearly bit through his lip trying to hold back his tears, but in the end he failed. They wept together over the woman. When their sobs eased, Arlen looked around, his eyes lifeless. He tried to focus, but the world seemed blurry, as if it wasn't real.
What do we do now? He asked finally.
We turn around, his father said, and the words cut Arlen like a knife. We take her home and burn her. We try to go on. There's still the farm and the animals to care for, and even with Renna and Noreen to help us, there's going to be some hard times ahead.
Renna? Arlen asked incredulously. We're still taking her with us, even now?
Life goes on, Arlen, his father said. You're almost a man, and a man needs a wife.
Did you arrange one for both of us? Arlen blurted.
What?
Jeff asked.
I heard you and Elaine last night, Arlen screamed.
You've got another wife already. What do you care about, ma'am? You've already got someone else to take care of your thingy, at least until she gets killed, too, because you're too scared to help her.
Arlen's father hit him, a hard slap across the face that cracked the morning air. His anger faded instantly, and he reached out to his son.
Arlen, I'm sorry, he choked. But the boy pulled away and jumped off the cart.
Arlen!
Jeff cried. But the boy ignored him, running as hard as he could for the woods off to the side of the road. Chapter 3 A Night Alone, 319 AR Arlen ran through the woods as fast as he could, making sharp, sudden turns, picking his direction at random. He wanted to be sure his father couldn't track him, but as Jeff's calls faded, he realized his father wasn't following at all. Why should he bother, he thought. He knows I have to come back before nightfall. Where else could I go? Anywhere. The answer came unbidden, but he knew in his heart that it was true. He couldn't go back to the farm and pretend everything was all right. He couldn't watch Elaine claim his mother's bed. Even pretty Renna, who kissed so softly, would only be a reminder of what he had lost and why. But where could he go? His father was right about one thing. He couldn't run forever. He would have to find succor before dark, or the coming night would be his last. Going back to Tibbetts Brook wasn't an option. Whoever he sought succor from would drag him home by the ear the next day, and he'd be switched for the stunt with nothing to show. Sunny pasture, then. Unless Hogg was paying them to carry something, almost no one from Tibbetts Brook ever went there, unless they were messengers. Colleen had said Reagan was heading to Sunny Pasture before returning to the Free Cities. Arlen liked Reagan, the only elder he'd ever met who didn't talk down to him. The messenger and Kieran were a day and more ahead of him, and mounted. But if he hurried, perhaps he could catch them in time and beg passage to the Free Cities. He still had Colleen's map strung around his neck. It showed the road to Sunny Pasture and the farms along the way. Even deep in the woods, he was pretty sure which way was north. At midday, he found the road, or rather the road found him, cutting straight across the woods ahead of him. He must have lost his sense of direction in the trees. He walked on for a few hours, but he saw no sign of a farm or the old herb-gatherer's home. Looking at the sun, his worry increased. If he was walking north, the sun should be off to his left, but it wasn't. It was right in front of him. He stopped and looked at the map, and his fears were confirmed. He wasn't on the road to Sunny Pasture. He was on the road to the Free Cities. Worse, after the road split off from the path to Sunny Pasture, it went right off the edge of the map. The idea of backtracking was daunting, especially with no way to know if he could make it to succor in time. He took a step back the way he had come. No, he decided. Going back is Da's way. Whatever happens, I'm going forward. Marlin started walking again, leaving both Tibbetts Brook and Sunny Pasture behind. Each step was lighter and easier than the one before. He walked for hours more, eventually leaving the trees behind and entering grassland, wide, lush fields untouched by plow or grazing. He crested a hilltop, breathing deeply of the fresh, untainted air. There was a large boulder jutting from the ground, and Arlen scrambled atop it, looking out at a wide world that had always been beyond his reach. There was no sign of habitation, no place to seek succor. He was afraid of the coming night, but it was a distant feeling, like knowing you would grow old and die one day. As the afternoon turned to evening, Arlen began looking for places to make his stand. A copse of trees held promise. There was little grass beneath them, and he could draw wards in the dirt. But a wood demon might climb one of the trees and drop into his warding ring from above. There was a small stony hillock free of grass, but when Arlen stood atop it, the wind was strong, and he feared it might mar the wards, rendering them useless. Finally, Arlen came to a place where flame demons had set a recent blaze. New buds had yet to pierce the ash, and the scuff of his foot found hard dirt beneath. He cleared the ash from a wide area and began his warding circle. He had little time, so he kept it small, not wanting his haste to make him careless. Using a sharp stick, Arlen drew the sigils in the dirt, gently blowing away loose scrapings. He worked for over an hour, ward by ward, stepping back frequently to assure himself that they were aligned properly. His hands, as always, moved with confidence and alacrity. When he finished, Arlen had a circle 6 feet in diameter. He checked the wards 3 times, finding no error. He put the stick in his pocket and sat at the circle's center, watching the shadows lengthen and the sun dip low, setting the sky awash with color. Perhaps he would die tonight. Perhaps not. Arlen told himself it didn't matter. But as the light waned, so too did his nerve. He felt his heart pounding, and every instinct told him to leap to his feet and run. But there was nowhere to run to. He was miles away from the nearest place of succor. He shivered, though it wasn't cold. This was a bad idea, a tiny voice whispered in his mind. He snarled at it, but the brave front did little to loosen his knotting muscles as the last rays of the sun winked out and he was bathed in darkness. "Here they come," that frightened voice in his head warned, as the wisps of mist began to rise from the ground. The mist coalesced slowly, demon bodies gaining substance as they slipped from the ground. Arlen rose with them, clenching his small fists. As always, the flame demons came first, scampering about in delight, trailing flickering fire as they went. These were followed by the wind demons, which immediately ran and spread their leathery wings, leaping into the air. Last came the rock demons, laboriously hauling their heavy frames from the core. And then the Corlings saw Arlen and howled with delight, charging the helpless boy. A swooping wind demon struck first, raking its hooked wing claws to tear out Arlen's throat. Arlen screamed, but sparks flew as the talons struck his wards, deflecting the attack. Momentum carried the demon on, and its body slammed into the shield only to be hurled back in a shimmering burst of energy. The creature howled as it struck the ground, but it pulled itself upright, twitching as energy danced across its scales. Next came the nimble flame demons, the largest no bigger than a dog. They skittered forward, shrieking, and began clawing at the shield. Arlen flinched each time the wards flared, but the magic held. When they saw that Arlen had woven an effective net, they spat fire at him. Arlen was wise to the trick, of course. He'd been warding since he was old enough to hold a stick of charcoal, and he knew the wards against fire spit. The flames were turned as effectively as the claws. He didn't even feel the heat. Corlings gathered to the spectacle, and each flash of light as the wards activated showed Arlen more and more of them. A fell horde, eager to flay the flesh from his bones. More wind demons swooped in and were thrown back by the wards. The flame demons, too, began to hurl themselves at him in frustration, accepting the stinging burn of the magic in hope of powering their way through. Again and again they were thrown back. Arlen ceased to flinch. He began to scream curses at them, shoving his terror aside. His defiance only enraged the demons further. Unused to being taunted by their prey, they doubled their efforts to penetrate the wards as Arlen shook his fists and made rude gestures he had seen the adults in Tibbetts Brook make to Hogg's back sometimes. This was what he feared? This was what humanity lived in terror of? These pathetic, frustrated beasts? Ridiculous. He spat, and the spit sizzled on a flame demon's scales, trebling its fury. There was a hush from the howling creatures then. In the flickering light of the flame demons, he saw the Corling host part, clearing a path for a rock demon that stomped toward him, its footsteps like an earthquake. All his life, Arlen had watched Corlings from afar, from behind windows and doors. Before the terrifying events of the last few days, he had never been outside in the air with a fully formed demon, and had certainly never stood his ground. He knew their size could vary, but he never appreciated just how much. The rock demon was 15 feet tall. The rock demon was enormous. Arlen craned his head upward as the monster approached. Even at a distance, it was a towering, hulking mass of sinew and sharp edges. Its thick black carapace was knobbed with bony protrusions, and its spiked tail slid back and forth, balancing its massive shoulders. It stood hunched on two clawed feet that dug great grooves in the dirt with every thunderous step. Its long, gnarled arms ended in talons the size of butchering knives, and its drooling maw split wide to reveal row after row of blade-like teeth. A black tongue slipped out, tasting Arlen's fear. One of the flame demons failed to move from its path quickly enough, and the rock demon swiped at it in an offhand manner, its talons tearing great gashes as the blow launched the smaller Corling through the air. Terrified, Arlen took a step back, and then another, as the giant Corling approached. It was only at the last moment that he came to his senses and stopped before he retreated right out of the protective circle. Remembering the circle gave fleeting comfort. Arlen doubted his wards were strong enough for this test. He doubted any wards were. The demon regarded him for a long moment, savoring his terror. Rock demons seldom hurried, though when they chose to, they could move with astonishing speed. As the demon struck, Arlen's nerve broke. He screamed and fell to the ground, curling up in a tight ball, covering his head with his arms. The resulting explosion was deafening. Even through his covered eyes, Arlen saw the bright flash of magic, as if night had become day. He heard the demon's shriek of frustration, and peeked out as the coiling whirled, smashing its heavy horned tail against the wards. Again the magic flared, and again the creature was thwarted. Arlen forced himself to let go of the breath he'd been holding. He watched as the demon struck his wards again and again, screaming in rage. The warm dampness clung to his thighs. Ashamed of himself, of his cowardice, Arlen came to his feet and met the demon's eyes. He screamed, a primal cry from deep within him that rejected everything the calling was and everything it represented. He picked up a stone and threw it at the demon. "Go back to the core where you belong," he cried. "Go back and die!" The demon barely seemed to feel the stone bounce off its armor, but its rage multiplied as it tore at the wards, unable to get through. Arlen called the demon every foul and pathetic thing in his somewhat limited vocabulary, clawing at the ground for anything he could throw. When he ran out of stones, he began jumping up and down, waving his arms, screaming his defiance. Then he slipped and stepped on a ward. Time seemed to freeze in the long, silent moment shared by Arlen and the giant demon, the enormity of what had just happened slowly dawning on them. When they moved as one. Arlen whipping out his etching stick and diving for the ward, even as the demon swiped a massive, clawed hand at him. His mind racing, Arlen assessed the damage in an instant. A single line of the sigil marred. Even as he repaired the ward with the slash of the tool, he knew he was too late. The claws had begun to cut into his flesh. But then the magic took effect once more, and the demon was hurled back, screaming in agony. Arlen, too, screamed in pain, rolling over and pulling the claws from his back, hurling them away before he could realize what had happened. He saw it then, lying in the circle, twitching and smoking. The demon's arm. Arlen looked at the severed limb in shock, turning to see the demon roaring and thrashing about, savaging any demon foolish enough to come within reach, savaging with one arm. He looked at the arm, its end neatly severed and cauterized, oozing a foul smoke. With more bravery than he felt, Arlen picked the massive thing up and tried to hurl it from the circle, but the wards made a two-way barrier. The stuff of callings could no more pass out than in. The arm bounced off the wards and landed back at Arlen's feet. Then the pain set in. Arlen touched the wounds along his back, and his hands came away wet with blood. Sickened, his strength ebbing, he fell to his knees, weeping for the pain, weeping for fear of moving and scuffing another ward, and weeping most of all for his ma'am. He understood now the pain that she had felt that night. Arlen spent the rest of the night cowering in fright. He could hear the demon circling, waiting, hoping for an error that would allow them access. Even if sleep had been possible, he wouldn't have dared attempt it, lest a shift in his slumber grant the callings their wish. Dawn seemed to take years to come. Arlen looked up at the sky often that night, but each time he saw only the giant, crippled rock demon clutching its caked and Icarus wound as it stalked the circle, hatred in its eyes. After an eternity, a hint of red tinged the horizon, followed by orange, yellow, and then a glorious white. The other callings slipped back down to the core before the yellow touched the sky, but the giant waited until the last, its rows of teeth bared as it hissed at him. But even the one-armed rock demon's hatred was no match for its fear of the sun. As the last shadows scurried away, its massive horned head sank beneath the ground. Arlen straightened and stepped from the circle, wincing in pain. His back was on fire. The wounds had stopped bleeding in the night, but he felt them tear open once more as he stretched. The thought led his eyes back to the clawed forearm lying next to him. It was like a tree trunk, covered in hard, cold plates. Arlen picked the heavy thing up and held it before him. Got a trophy, at least, he thought, making an effort to be brave, even though the sight of his blood on the black talon sent a shudder through him. Just then, a ray of light reached him. The sun, finally more above the horizon than below. The demon's limb began to sizzle and smoke, popping like a wet log thrown on a fire. In a moment, it burst into flame, and Arlen dropped it in fright. He watched fascinated as it flared brighter and brighter, the sun's light bearing down upon it until there was not left but a thin, charred remain. He stepped over and gingerly nudged it with his toe, collapsing it into dust. Arlen found a branch to use as a walking stick as he trudged on. He understood how lucky he was, and how stupid. Wards in the dirt were untrustworthy. Even Reagan said that. What would he have done if the wind had marred them, as his father threatened? Creator, what if it had rained? How many nights could he survive? Arlen had no idea what lay over the next hill, no reason to think that there was anyone between here and the Free Cities, which, by all accounts, were weeks away. He felt tears welling in his eyes. Brutally, he wiped them off, growling in defiance. Giving in to fear was his father's solution to problems, and Arlen already knew that it didn't work. I'm not afraid, he told himself. I'm not. Arlen pressed on, knowing the lie for what it was. Around midday, he came to a rocky stream. The water was cold and clear, and he bent to drink. The move sent lances of pain through his back. He'd done nothing for the wounds. It wasn't as if he could stitch them closed as Colleen might. He thought of his mother, and how when he came home with cuts or scrapes, the first thing she did was wash them out. He stripped off his shirt, finding the back torn and soaked through with blood, now crusted and hard. He dunked the shirt and watched as dirt and blood washed downstream. He laid his clothes out on the rocks to dry and lowered himself into the cold water. The chill made him wince, but it soon numbed the pain in his back. He scrubbed as best he could, gently washing out the stinging wounds until he could stand it no more. Shivering, he climbed from the stream and lay on the rocks by his clothes. He awoke some time later with a start. Cursing, he saw that the sun had moved far across the sky and that the day was nearly done. He could travel a little farther, but he knew the risk would be a foolish one. Better to spend the extra time on his defenses. Not far from the stream was a wide area of moist soil, and the sod pulled free easily, clearing him a space. He tapped down the loose dirt, smoothed it, and set to warding. He drew a wider circle this time, and then, after checking it thrice, drew another concentric circle within the first for added safety. The moist dirt would resist the wind, and the sky showed no threat of rain. Satisfied, Arlen dug a pit and gathered dry twigs, building a small fire. He sat in the center of the inner circle as the sun dipped, trying to ignore his hunger. He doused the fire as the red sky grew lavender, then purple, breathing deeply to steady his pounding heart. At last, the light vanished, and the corlings rose. Arlen held his breath, waiting. Finally, a flame demon caught his scent and raced at him with a shriek. In that moment, the terror of the previous night came rushing back to him, and Arlen felt his blood go cold. The corlings were oblivious to his wards until they were upon them. With the first flare of magic, Arlen breathed his relief. The demons clawed at the barrier, but they couldn't pass. A wind demon, flying up high where the wards were weak, passed the first ring, but it smashed into the second as it swooped down on him, landing hard in the space between. Arlen struggled to maintain his calm as it lurched to its feet. It was bipedal, with a long, thin body and spindly limbs that ended in 6-inch hooked claws. The undersides of its arms and the outside of its legs were webbed with a thin, leathery membrane, supported by flexible bones jutting from the creature's sides. The demon was barely taller than an adult man, but its spread wings spanned twice its height, making it seem huge in the sky. A curving horn grew from its head, bent back and webbed like its limbs to form a ridge down its back. Its long snout held rows of inch-long teeth, yellow in the moonlight. The Corling moved clumsily on land, despite its graceful mastery of the air. Up close, the wind demons weren't nearly as impressive as their cousins. Wood and rock demons had impenetrable armor and otherworldly strength to power their thick claws. Flame demons were faster than any man and spat fire that could set anything alight. Wind demons? Arlen thought Reagan could puncture one of those thin wings with a hard stab of his spear, crippling it. Night, he thought. I'm pretty sure I could do it myself. But he didn't have a spear, and, impressive or not, the Corling could still kill him if his inner wards didn't hold. He tensed as it drew close. It swiped the hooked talon at the end of its wing at him, and Arlen winced. But magic sparked along the ward net, and it was thwarted. After a few more futile strikes, the Corling attempted to get airborne again. It ran and spread its wings to catch the wind, but it struck the outer wards before it could gain sufficient momentum. The magic threw it back into the mud. Arlen laughed in spite of himself as the Corling tried to pick itself up from the dirt. Its huge wings might make it a terror in the sky, but on the ground they dragged and threw it off balance. It had no hands to push up with, and its spindly arms bowed under its weight. It thrashed desperately for a moment before it was able to rise. Trapped, it tried again and again to take off, but the space between the circles wasn't great enough, and it was foiled each time. The flame demons sensed their cousin's distress and shrieked with glee, hopping around the circle to follow the creature and taunt its misfortune. Arlen felt a swell of pride. He made mistakes the night before, but he wouldn't make them again. He began to hope that he might live to see the free cities after all. The flame demons soon tired of mocking the wind demon and moved off in search of easier prey, flushing small animals from hiding with gouts of fire. One small frightened hare leapt into Arlen's outer ring. The demon in pursuit stopped by the wards. The wind demon snatched clumsily at it, but the hare dodged it easily, running through the circle and out the far side, only to find Corlings there as well. It turned and darted back again running too far. Arlen wished there was a way he could communicate with the poor creature, to let it know it was safe in the inner ring, but he could only watch as it darted in and out of the wards. Then the unthinkable happened. The hare, scampering back into the circle, scratched out a ward. With a howl, flame demons poured through the gap after the animal. The lone wind demon escaped, leaping into the air and winging away. Arlen cursed the hare, and cursed all the more when it darted right for him. If it damaged the inner wards, they were both doomed. With a farm boy's quickness, Arlen reached from the circle and snatched up the hare by its ears. It thrashed wildly, willing to tear itself apart to escape. But Arlen had handled hares in his father's fields often enough. He swung it into his arms, cradling it on its back, hindquarters up above its head. In a moment, the hare was staring up at him blankly. Its struggles ceased. He was tempted to throw the creature to the demons. It would be safer than risking it getting free and scuffing another ward. And why not, he wondered. If I'd found it in the light, I'd have eaten it myself. Still, he found he couldn't do it. The demons had taken too much from the world, from him. He swore then that he would give them nothing willingly. Not now, not ever. Not even this. As the night wore on, Arlen held the terrified creature firmly, cooing at it and stroking its soft fur. All around, the demons howled, but Arlen blocked them out, focusing on the animal. The meditation worked for a time, until a roar brought him back. He looked up to find the massive one-armed rock demon towering over him, its drool sizzling as it struck the wards. The creature's wound had healed into a knobby stump at the end of its elbow. Its rage seemed even greater than the night before. The Corling hammered at the barrier, ignoring the stinging flare of the magic. With deafening blows, the rock demon struck again and again, attempting to power through and take its vengeance. Arlen clutched the hair tightly, his eyes wide as he watched. He knew that the wards wouldn't weaken from repeated blows, but it did little to stop the fear that the demon was determined enough to manage it anyway. When the morning light banished the demons for another day, Arlen finally let go of the hair, and it bounded away immediately. His stomach growled as he watched it go, but after what they had shared, he couldn't bring himself to look at the creature as food. Rising, Arlen stumbled and almost fell as a wave of nausea took him. The cuts along his back were lances of fire. He reached back to touch the tender, swollen skin, and his hand came away wet with the stinking brown ooze that Colleen had drained from Sylvie's wounds. The cuts burned, and he felt flushed. He bathed in the cold pool again, but the chill water did little to ease his inner heat. Arlen knew that he was going to die. Old May Freeman, if she existed at all, was over 2 days away. If he truly had demon fever, though, it didn't matter. He wouldn't last 2 days. Still, Arlen couldn't bring himself to give in. He stumbled on down the road, following the wagon ruts toward wherever they came from. If he was to die, let it be closer to the free cities than the prison behind. Chapter 4 Leisha, 319 AR. Leisha spent the night in tears. That, in and of itself, was nothing out of the ordinary, but it wasn't her mother that had her weeping this night. It was the screams. Someone's wards had failed. It was impossible to tell whose, but cries of terror and agony echoed in the dark, and smoke billowed into the sky. The whole village glowed with a hazy orange light as smoke refracted Corling fire. The people of Cutter's Hollow couldn't search for survivors. They dared not even fight the fire. They could do nothing save pray to the Creator that embers didn't carry on the wind and spread the flames. Houses in Cutter's Hollow were built well apart for just this reason, but a strong breeze could carry a spark a long way. Even if the fire remained contained, the ash and smoke in the air could easily obscure more wards with their greasy stain, giving Corlings the access they desperately sought. No Corlings tested the wards around Leisha's house. It was a bad sign, hinting that the demons had found easier prey in the dark. Helpless and afraid, Leisha did the only thing she could. She cried. Cried for the dead. Cried for the wounded. And cried for herself. In a village with fewer than 400 people, there was no one whose death wouldn't cut her. Just shy of 13 summers, Leisha was an exceptionally pretty girl with long, wavy black hair and sharp eyes of pale blue. She wasn't yet flowered, and thus couldn't wed, but she was promised to Garrod Cutter, the handsomest boy in the village. Garrod was 2 summers older than her, tall and thick-muscled. The other girls squealed as he passed, but he was Leisha's, and they all knew. He would give her strong babies. If he lived through the night. The door to her room opened. Her mother never bothered to knock. In face and form, Ilona was much like her daughter. Still beautiful at 30, she had long hair that hung rich and black about her proud shoulders. She also had a full, womanly figure that was the envy of all, the only thing Leisha hoped to inherit from her. Her own breasts had only just started to bud, and had a long way to go before they matched her mother's. "That's enough of your blubbering, you worthless girl," Ilona snapped, throwing Leisha a rag to dry her eyes. "Crying alone gets you nothing.
Cry in front of a man if you want your way, but wetting your pillow won't bring the dead to life.
She pulled the door closed, leaving Leisha alone again in the evil orange light flickering through the slats of the shutters.
"Do you feel anything at all?" Leisha wondered at her.